With the CNC himself, I only had one bad 5 minutes. A signal was made. "At what notice for steam are the destroyers?" I replied, "At 2 hours," and hastily looked up Grand Fleet orders, only to find destroyers were to be at 1 hour's notice. I knew Hawksley had turned over 2 hours to me verbally. I sent for H.R. Moore, whom I have not previously mentioned. He was not only first lieutenant and navigator of the ship, but staff officer, operations and general knowledge officer, and quite invaluable. I said, "How is it we are at 2 hours' notice for steam, when in the order book here it says 1 hour?" He knew at once and quoted a signal which had been made some months ago, which ran, "Destroyers may be at 2 hours' notice until further orders." So that when a further signal was received, that the CNC wished to see me at 9 o'clock the next morning, I went on board with a clear conscience. I was met by Brand, who said, "You had better stand from under. The CNC is very angry about the destroyers being at 2 hours' notice." In I went, to find the Admiral and the Chief of Staff, O.D.B. Brock. Brock, always nice to me personally, had, towards destroyers, I always felt, the sort of feeling which the pre-war Guards Brigade had towards other regiments of the line. Worthy people, even necessary. But a pity one has to talk about them. Anyway, there was the Chief of Staff with the order book in his hand. The opening was abrupt.
"Have you read the Grand Fleet orders, Commodore?"
"Yes, sir," I said truthfully, "since I had a few hours ago."
"Then why are the destroyers at 2 hours' notice?"
2 hours was turned over to me by Hawksley, sir.
"Perhaps you will read the order."
And as I saw Brock was ready to lead me away to the executioner, I had to produce a copy of the signal and date which I had in my pocket. The storm blew over, and the CNC merely said,
"Is there any reason why they shouldn't be at 1 hour?"
"None," I said, "except it will cost a little more. We shall burn a little more oil."
"All right," he said. "I want you at 1 hour's notice."
I went down to the captain of the fleet's cabin. I think he expected to see my broad stripes had been torn off, and I to be returned to store. I don't know what started the fuss, but it was the only time I found him ruffled. As a rule, he was always calm and ready to listen to anything. When in harbour, both in Gutter Sound and in Rosyth, there was telephone connection from his writing table to mine direct, with a connection on my bunk at night. The Admiral kept late hours, and it was more often than not round about midnight that he rang up to know how many destroyers I had available, how long it would take to get the patrols in, and so on. I had all this sort of information daily corrected on a board in front of me. Sometimes he would go on talking about matters of immediate interest. Sometimes he would just say, "Stand by. I may move in perhaps 2 hours or at a certain time." Those were, I think, the worst nights. No one must be told sooner than necessary. It was no good going to bed. One got into sea boots and oilskins and waited, checking over with Clegg the times of release for the various screening groups as soon as we got 0 hour, which was the time Queen Elizabeth would pass the gate. If at Scapa the first screening group of destroyers passed the Long Hope gate so many minutes before 0, so as to be in position to take station ahead as the first division of battleships passed the main gate. Each battleship division passed the gate so many minutes apart, and each flotilla was slipped from their buoys accordingly. At Rosyth, a similar organisation existed, 0 being the time the leading battleship passed under the bridge. Passing under the bridge, heavy ships used the centre arch. We used the side arch. Usually, it was a more easy manoeuvre at Rosyth, as you could see the ships coming down the Firth. But if the departure coincided with a strong ebb tide, it was a difficult operation, and one I should have given much to watch from the shore. There could have been few more impressive sights than to see that huge fleet sweeping down and disappearing one by one under the bridge. There were occasions, of course, when things were unusually difficult. A day when we went out in a thick fog and as suddenly steamed into bright sunlight outside May Island, with the flagship flying the signal to destroyers, "Manoeuvre well executed," to be followed immediately by a submarine alarm.